it's happening for real. For realsies. It's going to be one of those evenings. I can already feel it. Does the thing work? Oh, good. Thank goodness gracious. All right. How you doing? Start there. No, you're not.
My thing works.
Hey, what's up, Mike? Can you hear us? Are we all good?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yep. Lovely, lovely.
Talk amongst yourselves while I fix my lighting.
Beautiful. Nicole. We've got a great night for you. Let me just tell you what. It's Tuesday, November 14, 2023. Magnus Walker is here. We're very happy about that. We have been at the hospital all day. UCLA Medical, the usual place of urology today. It doesn't really matter what we go for. It's all the same bit of bullshit. How you doing?
Very wobbly, as you saw, but yeah. Whatever.
It is sucking extra lately.
Yes, and today sucked so bad.
So bad.
And I get exhausted thinking about how bad things can get, and so I don't, and that's not healthy or healthy depending on how you look at it.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, a real quick recap, and then we'll get Magnus in here because he does like to do the walk-in and everything. We had an appointment at the whatever the time it was, 10:15, something like that. We were like 10-15 minutes late for our appointment because of I'm gonna guess the freeway gate or whatever. We were nowhere near the closure, but it took us what normally takes us a half an hour took us an hour and 15 today. So we were late. We were late for our appointment, and they were nice enough to schedule us in. You say, all right, well, you missed this, but if you hang around, obviously we'll fit you in. And we're like, great. But it was another 2 hours and 15 minutes before they saw us, and we didn't know that. They didn't know that. You know what I mean? There's nobody at fault here. But everything in your life is timed around going to the bathroom, et cetera. And because of this whole situation, you wet your pants twice while we're sitting in the damn lobby. And then sitting there in that, like, and then it sucks. And then we're there for a urology appointment. And they're like, oh, we thought you'd be all ready. And we're like, we can't do the things your other patients can do. You know, she's not able-bodied. It's just very frustrating because it's like page one every single time.
I know.
I'm telling them.
It's like that's all the time.
All right, I won't wear you out any further. All of that to say, we are all very grateful and delighted that you made a concerted effort to be here tonight. I did not expect you to make the show tonight after today. So I'm really grateful you're here. Good job.
Thanks. I thought about it. I don't know how to not do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be here till I'm gone.
But where does that come from? Is that your old job? Is it childhood? Where does that come from? You were an athlete.
Childhood. I think that athletic training started really early. The competitive nature in my family was inherent.
Yeah.
So that made me really good at athletics.
And then it made you really good at not backing down on your job, which was really awesome.
Yeah, it was good while I had it.
Well, the warrior thing gets thrown around a lot, and I think until you're actually faced with dealing with this shit on a regular day, it just kind of feels like a word. Today I saw you, and I just totally saw the warrior part of this, and it sucks, and you're still here, so... Bravo. That's it. Way to start with a bummer. Yeah, let's turn it into a positive. I'm so impressed with you. Here, have as much of this as you want. That's fresh.
It's That's so fresh.
Good. All right. Here's the good news. On to the good news. We have got a lot of stuff to talk to Mr. Magnus Walker tonight. He's got his show OPP, which is killing it on YouTube. We're going to be talking about F1. You know, Vegas. 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 We're talking about F1. Rensport happened since he's been here last. Big news for us locally is ACH is open. At least the top part, you can get to Newcomb's. Big deal for all of us. Huge. And if you're on the internet already, you probably already know about this, but there's a major announcement and a major announcement. It's a big deal. All right? Those are the things we're going to be talking about with Magnus. Oh, and then lastly, let's get the business out of the way. We need a new iPad Pro. We need $1,000. Sponsors, we need $1,000 or a new iPad Pro so I can return this one. It turns out that is what our technical snafus were all about. We needed new hardware. Surprise. Apple gets us every time they do that. So we need that. And one more new iPhone. One more new iPhone. It doesn't need to be new. 11 Pro or newer. Can be an old one in a drawer. There we go. Thanks to Hank for the other one. All right. Now we're good. This guy likes to do the walk-in. Peeking around the corner. Everybody, please welcome our good friend, the urban outlaw himself, Mr. Magnus Walker.
Hello.
Good to see you.
Same.
How are you, brother? Good. Look at this. I love the look.
Well, I'm going to let the hat
switch
down.
It up.
I'm going to let the hat down. Oh. I'm coming without the hat. Yeah, I don't know if I'm having a good hair day or not. We'll find out.
I think so. Do you have a bad hair day? Is it always just kind of a version of whatever it is?
Yeah, it's always a version of whatever it is. You know, there's less hair now and it's grayer, but, you know, sometimes I look back on photos from not too long ago and there was more hair and, you know, it wasn't gray, but that's life, right?
Yeah, but I know what you mean about the gray, but I feel like your face is getting younger.
You think?
Yeah, right now I do. Is it the lights?
I don't know. Maybe it's the swimming pool. I was in the swimming pool literally like at 4 o'clock, like an hour ago.
At your house?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm not swimming.
Right
I'm treading water. Yeah, the pool's not heated, so it's 50 degrees in the pool.
That's a cold.
Yeah, it gets under 50. I'm all about that, you know, infrared sauna slash cold plunge. So getting in the pool at 50 degrees, I'm not doing laps, but I'm treading water.
Treading water's harder. I swam in it for like a minute, and that was plenty.
Yeah, I'm up to 5. The goal is to sort of work up to 10 or 20 minutes just treading water. But it's all about, you know, the strokes. So, you know, different strokes for different folks. So maybe that's it, you know. Maybe it's my swimming pool regime. That or, you know, I'm now up to 12,000 steps a day on the...
Good Lord.
Yeah, on the walking.
Your average? Is it
yeah.
up to 12? Are you consciously trying to beat your best?
Yeah, I am. Because last year I just scraped into 11,000. The year before, the 3-4 years before, I'd been consistent at like 10,500, something like that.
And everybody gets this. It's easy to do the average, or it's easy to do each one, day, you know,
right,
one day
right.
here and there, but you've got over the full year.
Yeah, here's the challenge. Let's say one day you do 8,000 steps. The next day you actually have to do 17,000 just to get back to average. So, God. You know, the average 12 is about 6 miles. It actually takes a fair bit of time.
You're like the cannonballer of steps.
Well, that's where Willow comes in handy and helpful. You know, I got to walk like 3-4 times a day. You know, live up to my last name, but yeah. So you know, these like the goal. You know, discipline's like being goal orientated. So for me, the goal is to average 12,000 steps. But now it's the pressure's on because some days, you know, let's say I'm traveling or something, you only do a few thousand. Then you got to pull this, you know, 20,000 step thing to get back to the base. So I'm close. You know, I'm dropping like 11,998, which is only 4 steps times, but it's 4 steps times every day. So it's like 4 times 365 just to get back up to the 12. I got a lot of cars, but I walk a lot of steps.
But I feel like it's one of the. The question would be, how much time do you think about this? But it seems like it's probably a lot. You're in on the steps.
Yeah, because I'm close to you know, I set a goal. Like I didn't set a goal of 12,000, but halfway through the year, I'm like, wow, I'm averaging 12,000 a day. Let me see if I can keep that up. So now I'm sort of like down to the home stretch, you know, like the year's gone extremely quick.
Yeah.
You know, I remember back in March saying, hey, before you know it, it'll be like 4th of July, then Labor Day, and then Halloween and Thanksgiving, and we're here, right?
Ugh.
Like, it's gone in a blink of an eye.
Don't even start. Do you have a lot going on? I mean, you do. I've seen the blue card. You have a lot going on right now. We have a lot going on. So does it make it then seem like the time flies even faster?
Yeah, for sure. You know, like, I'm getting up early. I'm waking up at like 5:30, maybe out of bed by 6. You know, it's helping with it being light up. You know, 6 a.m. mm-hmm. is helping. But yeah, there's
But then I crash in the evening. We're well, in bed even earlier than we usually are.
Can we go to bed? It's 8 o'clock.
For real. might be sleep at 8 o'clock.
Tonight's a late night. It's a school night. I'm going down. We're going downtown to see Kate Clover play with the Hives at the Blasco next to the Mayan Theater. So.
Oh, that's
It'd
pretty cool.
It'd be a late
cool.
night for a school night.
And you were still up at 5:30?
Yeah,
or whatever?
I think I got up at 6, but I woke up at 5:30.
I don't know how you're still able to do that.
Hey, you only live once, right?
I guess so. Is that it? I just got to change my mentality.
Gotta
Lately,
keep
we're
moving.
Just so goddamn tired.
You got to keep moving.
Well, anyway, whatever it is, the steps, the swims, something, your face looks younger even.
I'm going to put it down to the infrared sauna and the cold plunge and the 50-degree pool.
Do you have the sauna at the house?
No, it's on the list, but we've got to build a deck to put the infrared sauna in a shed on a deck in the trees. You know, we want that sort of outdoor thing.
Oh.
And then I'm going to build like a cold
Swiss Family
plunge.
Walker.
Kind of like that, yeah. Yeah. The house update is moving slow. You know, yesterday's house dilemma was sort of a sad one. You know, we got the pond, which is all sort of overgrown. It's got this great vibe. And
I love the pond.
They've got a bunch of koi fish in it and goldfish. And
it's like Disneyland, your pond.
Yeah, it kind of is. So yesterday I'm walking down, you know, I walk past the car and I see we've got like the koi fish have now got pretty big, like 12, 14, 16 inch. But I see one literally ripped in half and gills everywhere and some paw print of what I think is a raccoon or a possum.
Oh, whoa.
So, you know, I guess for 18 months we were lucky on the raccoons and possums and skunks hadn't realized we had fish in the pond.
Oh.
But yesterday they discovered, you know, it's like sushi on tap in the pond. So I literally see half of this like koi and it's probably at least 8 inch of it left. Big, like, but missing the head and like the first third of it just ripped in half, and these like gills, and you know, just it wasn't a pretty sight. So,
you didn't like name them or anything, right?
No, we didn't name them, but you know, it was sort of piece. I mean, they're still there, but you know, at the back of my mind is like, this guy's gonna keep coming back now.
Oh, yeah,
so
now he knows where the store is.
Yeah, so I've actually got a couple of cages baited with some food sort of hidden around the pond that hopefully, whatever it is, and I'm thinking it's either a possum or a raccoon, is, you know.
And something's going to come and eat the raccoon.
I mean, it's, you know, we're just over the hill there, but, you know, it's at one with nature. We've seen, you know, coyotes and, you know, the mountain lion
yeah.
and deer all the time and snakes and possums and
you really moved to the country.
We moved to the country and it's literally a mile north of Hollywood Boulevard. But yeah, it's like moon of the country out there. But yeah, seeing the koi fish literally ripped in half and half of it still there and gills everywhere was kind of a bit of a wake-up call.
And not Willow. It was too small.
Well, no, but Willow like goes off all the time because we hear coyotes all the time yakking. But whenever it happened, you know, it happened so stealth. Willow wasn't alarmed by it because normally she goes off.
Oh, right.
So, but she didn't hear anything.
Wow. So maybe in the middle of the night kind
I'm
of
I'm sure it was in the middle of the
Jeez.
Night. Jeez. Yeah. That's tranquility well, in this, them there. Hollywood
I feel like
Hills.
Everybody should subscribe to this story because this will be ongoing, I guarantee.
Well, the house.
Well, the house for sure, but yeah. the koi pond, I think.
Oh, the koi pond. Yeah.
Because then you need an animal offense around.
I mean,
it's
well, we don't want to do that. You see, we don't want to net it because that spoils the whole thing. And
totally.
You know, I've had issues with coyotes and raccoons downtown in the back alley garden behind the warehouse.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, downtown is kind of odd because a lot of people feed stray cats. So they're leaving food out for stray cats. But they don't realize they're actually feeding this rather large, aggressive posse of raccoons and possums. Because there's so many restaurants out there now.
They leave it
out.
They just leave it out. It's not like they see the cat.
They're like feeding stray cats.
Yeah.
But in reality, they're feeding stray cats and raccoons and possums.
I wouldn't give your troubles to a monkey on a rock.
I thought I escaped the raccoons in downtown, but apparently, you know, they're roaming around in the hills as well.
There have been, you know, we can get up to ACH again.
Yeah.
We've been spending some time up there, and there's definitely a lot of more critters in the woods than there were when the road was
open. Well, I think,
open.
You know, they've had 9 months of no traffic, so they've had the freedom to roam, right?
Yeah.
I've actually gone up there 3 times myself in the past 2 weeks, not necessarily on Friday. I went up there last week, fastest I've ever gone. In a Pininfarina Battista.
That was a very good-looking car.
Yeah, I mean, staggering speed. You know, you kind of...
What was the horsepower? It was electric and...
It's something like 1900, which sounds nuts. So, you know, you start...
it is nuts.
You start in the base mode, I forget what it is, then you go up one notch to that, and then before you know it, you're like one step away from race mode. And then, of course, you got to go to race mode. And it's kind of nuts because... It's kind of usable power. I mean, it sounds crazy. How is 1,900 horsepower usable?
Yeah.
But it's how punchy it is coming out of corners and how quickly you get to insane speeds, faster than you've ever gone. And then you realize, wow, I'm coming into this turn 10, 15, 20 miles an hour quicker than I've ever gone. So you've got to adjust braking point, turning point, all that stuff. But yeah, it's great that the road's back open. I actually went up there on Sunday. You know, I have this thing of never going in ACH on the weekend.
On the weekend, yeah.
Ever. And every time I go, there's sort of an incident. And, you know, over the weekend, I'm like, you know, I got that old Ferrari, the 75 308 GT4. I haven't driven it
I love
in
car.
Like 6 months at least. I go, let's go drive it. So I go down the warehouse.
Blue with the gold wheels, the little wedge one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course, you know, the Bertone one, the only non-Pininfarina bodied Ferrari.
Oh, hilarious.
So, of course, the car doesn't start, right? You know, and of course, my pro jumper box is at the house because, you know, it had an issue with the Rolls Royce, you know, the 69 Coupe.
Oh, it didn't start leaving Newcombs?
No. It didn't start in the warehouse before I even went.
Got it.
And what I'm saying is my big jumper charge box I'd left at the house.
I gotcha.
Because the Rolls had a dead battery because that generator's going. And it's like vintage car mayhem. But I'm like dedicated to getting the Ferrari to start. So, of course, I got these two portable jumper boxes. One doesn't have quite enough charge in it, so I got to get the other one out. So, of course, this becomes like 20, 25 minutes just to start the car. And then I'm like, of course it needs gas. And I'm like, just don't die because it's probably not going to restart. But I take the jumper box with me. Anyway, I ended up putting 150 miles on that car on Sunday.
So once it started, you were good.
Yeah, once it started. But my fear was, you know, if it stalled because, you know, it wasn't, you know, it's just warming up and idling, hunting around and trying to find the happy spot. So, of course, I pull into the gas station, hand throttle on, keep it running, revs up. But the point I'm trying to make is I went back up the crest on a Sunday, drove for 3 hours, had zero issues with the car, saw a few cops up there on the weekend.
Mm-hmm, us too.
Yeah, but avoided all that, went up to Newcombs, went up to Mount Wilson, and then went back down 9 Mile, turned right, went to the forest.
Nice.
And came back down the 14. It was great. It's good to have the road back open, the pavement and everything.
Yeah, we started going up a little before it opened, but we didn't realize how much we had missed it. I think given everything going on in our life or whatever, I mean, I think we were just like when the cat died, you don't realize how much you're leaning on something when shit's going wrong. Yeah. And we were really leaning on it, I think.
It's good to get back to Newcombs, even though it's not open. It doesn't really matter. It's kind of home.
For sure. Now, why? What the fuck? Is it just because it's the only place up there? Why do we all feel that way?
Well, I've been going there for over 20 years. I mean, the road itself is great, right, to Newcombs. And when you get to Newcombs, it literally just feels like home, even though it's not open.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just plenty of places to chill. And, of course, it's the people and the camaraderie and the memories and everything else that Newcombs sort of represents. So I think it's that because the temporary location, which was, what, 8-9 months in the end?
Oh, for Breakfast Club?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was, you know, Mill Creek Summit. Yeah,
yeah, just didn't have the same vibe. The power lines above it buzzing me kind of threw me a little bit.
It was every other time. It was awful.
Yeah, I'm like.
But you're also on the main drag there where there's constant traffic instead of being secluded up in
so
kind of a
loud
private room.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's great about the road to Newcombs.
Yeah.
I just can't wait for the whole crest to be open.
Soon. Well, not the whole crest, but the lower part will be open soon, probably by the end of the month. Mount Wilson, the red box closure.
Because that's kind of one of my favorite stretches. Plus, you know, when you got to go down the forest to 9 Mile, it's got to add another 15 miles to the trip.
Yeah, but does it add much more time?
I think it does. I'd say it's at least 12 more miles. 9 Mile's 9 Mile, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the turnoff for the forest to Mount Wilson's probably 2, and then the whole way to get to, I reckon it's a solid 12 miles. I say it adds more time for sure.
Yeah. It's just a higher speed on that 9 Mile. I mean, you really cook.
Yeah, 9 Mile's really fast. That's the fastest bit. Anyway, yeah, it's good that it's open.
That was maybe even more exciting to have 9 Mile open because that was sort of pseudo closed during the whole thing.
I like, you know, I forgot how much I like when you take the forest out to the 14, that uphill sweeping section. Mm. And then down to Aliso Canyon. I don't know if you ever do that.
That's my favorite.
You know, that's like a whoop-de-doo roller coaster right there.
Yeah, don't cook that one on your first time because there's a couple turns that look like they're fine and then the road disappears.
Which way is it going? Left,
there's
right?
There's a farm down there. There's nothing but.
Yeah. So, you know, you do Aliso Canyon down to whatever it is that runs parallel to the 14 and then back down to Sand.
Eventually we get to Sierra Highway or whatever is over there by the halfway house.
Yeah, that's a nice run down there.
And then the rocks too, the Vasquez Rocks are there too.
I like those. Do you ever go out there?
We've been, but it's one of those once you've seen it, like we haven't gone back since we took the yellow car out. Okay. No real reason.
I mean, it's so close to the 14 when you go past it, though.
I know. We should pop in, right?
Yeah, just pop in the Vasquez. Just pop on in.
What? You want to buy Newcombs with us?
What's going to happen in Newcombs? I mean, this is a perfect example on the road's been closed for 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
Newcombs, to my knowledge, has been closed, 4 years?
3 and a half. Oh, I have a you know what? I have a picture of it because you and I disagreed about when it closed. Okay. You and I were there with it open on March 6th of 2020.
No way. It was open right before COVID?
Oh, yeah.
But that must have been like one of their temporary things where they weren't really open all the time. So March 6th, it was open.
Mm-hmm. And we were week to week to week, and we put some shit on the walls, and we said to Danny, all right, see you next week. And then, you know, the TV said, hey, you can't go out of your house for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, let's ride out this storm, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll just see how it goes.
What's going on with Newcombs? What's Freddie doing over there?
Well, right now we're the caretakers, which is awesome for us.
Right.
But it's a real bummer that we can't, like, you know, open it and share it with people.
I mean, it would be great if someone just did a potluck Thanksgiving there. How about that for an idea?
I love it. I love it.
I mean, don't tell anyone, right? Don't tell anyone about this idea that's brewing.
This is the right place to talk about it if you don't want people to know.
Yeah. No one will know.
I think...
But that would be cool. I've actually gone to Newcombs back in the day. I remember going there with my mum, probably 2015, for either Thanksgiving or Christmas Day dinner. Because that was great when you could go there on Christmas Day.
Danny would... They would do like 5 or 6 turkeys.
Right.
And any you know, it was like a Friendsgiving, any orphan who didn't have a place to go, you just go up to the mountain.
You got the key. So bring your own turkey, right? BYOT.
Yeah. Well, we could.
Yeah.
I mean, we could. Let's do it.
I mean, is anyone putting offers in on Newcombs?
Lots of people, but things haven't worked out. And now it's
world?
No. I know it's much more reasonable place now. I think they're at $5 million is what it's listed
That's
at.
Still a lot, though.
It is.
You know, for an uncontrollable environment when the road might be closed for 9 months, what are you going to do?
At the whim of God.
Right. Nature always wins, it seems.
But enough time has passed. You know, 3 years ago, people were like, well, why don't you and Nicole put something together and figure it out and whatever? And we were like, screw that.
Amazing how many people have been linked to, oh, so-and-so is buying Newcombs.
Mm-hmm.
No, such-and-such a dude's buying Newcombs.
That's right.
And when all those dudes with all the money in the world are still not buying Newcombs, there's something wrong there.
You're saying they've done their due diligence?
Yeah, I'm saying they've got out the calculator and pencil and pen and tried to figure out how this thing makes sense. I think the challenge really is it's 26 miles up, right, if the road's open.
Yep.
So it's a 52-mile round trip if you live at the bottom of the hill.
Yep.
And not everyone wants to live on campus, so to speak, right? So just finding people that are going to go up there.
There's you and me, and Sean Lindauer. And you see the mugs, so you know that they were open.
What is going on when this happens? What is going on there? See, it's lifting it when I'm trying to zoom in.
I probably need to reboot my phone.
Oh, don't do that.
My phone is the... Oh, there we go.
I'm still on the iPhone 11. I heard you talking about...
Are
iPhone
you?
Yeah, I'm still on iPhone 11.
Well, you had the old small one for a long time before that.
Yeah, but I'm still on that, which is an 11.
Yeah.
What are you on? What is this?
It's the new one.
Oh, really? You know, my fear is like upgrading, losing all my stuff, and not knowing passwords.
Yeah, that happened. You're legitimate concern.
Yeah. This was the derby hat days. And skinny dude here, right? I mean, he's now like Mr. Universe.
Now he's the Hulk. He's still Bruce Banner here.
Yeah. he's
Sean Lindauer.
I haven't seen him in forever.
They're inside. He sold his Porsche, so he hasn't been doing car stuff, I guess. He's just been going to the gym.
He's huge. I mean, he's in beast mode.
He's full beast mode.
Yeah. Good for him.
I don't know what's going to happen with Newcombs, but we are now in a place where we're looking to get involved because I don't want it to go away. I am legitimately at a place where I don't want it to go away. Yeah. I don't want somebody to burn it down. I don't want it to go to eminent domain and then the city get the
you know the roof starts leaking and before you know it it's like torn apart.
We got really lucky with the snow from last winter. It's good inside. Everything's fine. But what about one more year like that without somebody there? So. All of those things really concern me to the point where like, oh, well, are you willing to step up and get people involved and buy it? I don't know, but
we're
closer than we've ever...
You live upstairs.
You know, that's the part that's hard because you kind of have to live there if you're going to be a damn innkeeper, right?
Right. I think so.
But I feel like at this point in our life, you're healthier up there than anywhere else and I don't know.
The
we're more open
nice
to it ever before.
Yeah, it's pretty nice up there.
And just being away from everything else.
Yeah, it's peaceful, quiet. Mm-hmm.
It's a vibe, like a frequency thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Harmonious. Yeah. Harmony. Harmony. Hug money. It's like, you know, in Scotland, they got that New Year's Eve thing they call hug money. It's like a festival party.
Okay.
Hug money, New Year's Eve. Kind of like Times Square, but without New York.
And they're celebrating the new year, but they call it hog
money. Yeah,
they call
it hog money for some reason. It's big in Edinburgh, you know, with the castle and a whole bunch of ravers and Burning Man types. But I guess it's like, you know, a thousand-year-old tradition. Just got to get out your kilt and press it and, you know, get ready to go to hog money. Taunting outlaws, as I say.
All right, well, moving down the list.
Moving down. We got
Rensport.
Rensport.
How was it?
Did you didn't go?
We ended up not going. We ended up not being able to go.
I got to be honest. I was there Thursday, Friday. I almost didn't go. I found it anticlimactic, is what I found. You know, maybe because I'd been at Monterey Historic like 3 weeks before, and there were a lot of the similar cars there. Granted, there's everything you'd ever want to see is there, but sort of what got it for me is I talked to people who were waiting in line to get merch for 2, 3, 4 hours.
I heard that, 4 hours.
But yeah, you'd look at the grandstands when the cars were on track on Thursday and Friday. I don't know how it was on Saturday. I wasn't there. But the 2 days I was there, the grandstands on the start-finish line and by turn three, and even up at the corkscrew, where there is no grandstand, but people-wise, empty. Turn, you know, start-finish line empty, turn three.
What a bummer.
Maybe 10%. So here's the point to my sort of rambling. It seems to me people were more interested in buying a T-shirt, a baseball cap, and a poster to say they were at Rensport than they were to actually watch the motoring on track at Rensport, judging by the lack of butts in seats on the grandstand. And then my other sort of disconnect is Rensport is a motorsports event, which is great. But Porsche was celebrating its 75th anniversary, which only comes around once. So to focus a lot of it just on the motorsports division left a lot of areas lacking, I thought, when it came to 75 years of Porsche history.
Okay.
And I think in reality, they should have done it on June 8th, which was the 75th anniversary of the birth of Porsche, Gmund, June 8th, 1948, and not made it like a celebration of motorsports, because yes, motorsports is what Porsche is known for, but it's not, it's only part of the picture. So for me, it was kind of like, it's a motorsports event, but most people are not watching the motorsports. But then you've got like the Sally Carrera car that's 20 years old on display, and you've got the new Transformer car, both of which have nothing to do with motorsports.
You're right. But yeah, if you're gonna stretch out, I see your
point. Do it all. Do it all. You know, show everything over the history of 75 years. Don't just focus on motorsports and then from some marketing PR division throw in a movie car from Cars, which is literally 20 years old, that 996.
Well, but they just did the 992, Sally, and that's their reason it's current, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a stretch, and it's a stretch for Rensport, because Rensport's, you know...
None of it's motorsport.
No.
Yeah.
So you kind of like...
Sally was an innkeeper, the Cozy Cone Motel.
That was my take on Rensport. I mean, in the end, I'm glad I went, but
I was mildly
disappointed.
Is there some other Porsche event, anniversary event, where they're going to be doing some of the things that you just talked about, and maybe that's why
we got 5 weeks left of, you know, the 75th anniversary. So, no. No. And, you know, the other thing also is it's a very American event, Rensport. It doesn't happen in other countries around the world. And the racing that is happening at Rensport... It's not a championship event. Therefore, no one's running for points. So there's a lot of European teams that don't come to Rensport that have cool cars.
Interesting.
So, you know, to me...
Because it's just exhibition.
It's exhibition. You know, it's not like the final leg of IMSA or this or HSR Historics or...
I don't think I knew that. I kind of thought it was that IMSA.
Not to my knowledge. Oh, I mean, there might be one run group Carrera Cup of some sort.
But no, but I thought like that was the point of doing it over... the weekend at Laguna. I don't quite get
why it wasn't actually on the 75th anniversary of Porsche. So to me, it was kind of like it could have been more. So I was left sort of wanting more and left a little disappointed.
Why don't we take over as the marketers of Porsche?
Yeah. You know, they had a track to race, you know, get out and plow. I suppose that was cool.
Yeah, but they had that last time.
Seven years
ago.
Yeah, for sure. So that's my take on Rensport.
All right. Well, it's always nice to be at Laguna Seca.
Yeah, we'll see what happens for the 76th anniversary next year.
That'll be the big one. Yeah, everybody knows the 76 is when you blow it out.
Yeah.
How was Historics, though, Monterey Historics? Because that's like the thing to do. That, Goodwood, Lime Rock Historics.
That was great. You know, Monterey Historics is always great. It's just, you know, that's kind of like, the best day of Monterey Car Week, you know, which depending when you go is either, you know, 2, 3 days or a whole week. So, you know, there's just a lot going on there with Quail and Pebble and all that stuff. You know, maybe Pebble Beach Concourse is losing its luster a little bit because, like, the average age there is like
so much other stuff, too.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of the focus, I think, on Pebble is it's an older generation that's into Duesenbergs and Delahays and pre-war stuff, which I'm not really interested in.
Right.
So, you know, did go there, went to a Goodwood Festival of Speed. We were there on the rainy day, the rainy Friday. You know,
that was rough. There was a lot of incidents on the track that day.
And it gets super muddy. You know, the thing I can't quite figure out with Goodwood and Lord Mark and Festival of Speed, of which they've done for 30 years, logistically it's hard getting around. I don't know if you've ever gone. Mm-hmm. But there's only two bridges that go over the road or the track. And the driveway. And because everyone's English, everyone queues and no one sort of butts in. So it can literally take you 10, 15 minutes to cross over this bridge.
Magnus, your American is showing.
That's right. So factor the rain in, and then it's a mud bath, and everyone's got umbrellas, so your eyes are getting poked out. And then logistically, it's really cramped because, you know, they sold off every single convincible inch of space to corporate vendors. So it's way too much of a corporate event, champagne sort of thing. So logistically, it's challenging. Then factor rain and mud and trying to spend 10, 15 minutes just crossing over the driveway. You know, it was kind of a miserable day.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a parade going up the hill anyway. It's not a motorsport event, the Festival of Speed. There's no real, I suppose there is a time section, but a lot of it is corporate press drives going up the hill in the latest, greatest, whatever car that people have paid
to get some drive time.
Yeah.
You know, you get to go up with Sir Jackie Stewart or whoever happens to
exactly.
be.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it's not necessarily the world's greatest event either, but Goodwood Revival, that seems to be the event.
Have you ever been to Lime Rock or the Historics at Lime Rock?
I'm not the Historics, but I have been to Lime Rock.
Lime Rock is, I mean, it's my home track. Yeah, it was the first track I ever saw, so I think I have a certain sentimentality. But I also happen to love it. I legitimately love it. And the Historics going around that, to me, are awesome because it's the right size.
Yeah,
it's a tiny little
small.
Mile and a half. Whoa, here it comes again. Here it comes again.
Coming around real quick.
Yeah.
Well, Goodwood Festival of Speed, they just go up the hill and that's it. They never come back.
See you later.
Yeah, literally it, up the hill. So that's my take on Goodwood.
Ugh. What's your, I mean, do you have a favorite car event every year? Would it be the Monterey Historics?
Oh, that's a great question.
Move to Cucult.
I'm going to less events as time goes on. I'm kind of getting more picky and choosy. I used to love and still love stumbling across these events at Woodley Park. You know, the Mopar Spring Fling, Fall Fling, whatever it may be, the Mopar event. There's always a great British car show there, French-Italian car show there.
It's like Van Nuys? Is that
Woodley Park is right there off the 405.
But is it Van Nuys there? What is that?
The cross street?
Yeah. Because you literally get off the freeway and go up the road and it's right there.
Yeah, literally, yeah. I just know it as Woodley Park. Okay. I don't know if it's Van Nuys or what, but it's that. And I even forget the exit off the 405.
Sherman Oaks, something like
that. Yeah,
there.
It's kind of Sherman Oaksy. So the problem with events is I always tend to hear about them 2 days after they happen. And I'll go, how did I not hear about that? That sounds great. I wish I could have gotten to that.
I can't believe you're not on the invite list to stuff.
And sometimes you are, sometimes you're not, you know? Yeah. I mean, there's so much going on. Just look at this weekend, right? There's Radwood, or last, like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
There was Radwood, there was Velocity International, there was the Wind Concours in Vegas. I got invited to that, but I'd just been out in Vegas for SEMA, and then I'm going out in 2 days for F1 in Vegas. So only so much time you can spend in Vegas in a two-week period, you know, unless you just really love Vegas.
So I got a thing against Nevada currently.
Oh, really? Oh, your ticket. Yeah.
The ticket and the bullshit attached.
What's the bullshit attached?
Oh, but I told you they wouldn't let us. They wouldn't let us be seen or anything.
Yeah,
this is escalating.
So where's it at as of now?
I don't plan on driving in Nevada anytime soon. Okay. So we're working it out.
All right, you're working it out.
The off the record people that sponsor Matt's podcast, they've reached out.
They've
and
taken
want
over.
To, well, they want to. Help. So I got So we're going to be chatting. One. Send some greasy city lawyer up there to waste their time for 2 years.
What a pain in the neck.
Yeah. It sucked. It sucked because you know what it like traveling is like.
How long was that drive there?
8 hours. But we got there at 9 o'clock at night, and the court was at 9:30 in the morning. We got the court at 9 in the morning, and they wouldn't see us. So we literally left Tahoe at 9:30 in the morning. We were there for 12 hours.
Crazy.
You know what I mean? It was like, it was a totally worthless trip. 1,000 miles, absolutely
principle
worthless.
Though. Principle.
Well, I thought so.
Yeah.
I thought so. I thought I was going to
do the right thing.
Yeah, stand by. Yeah. You know, give me liberty or give me death, you son of a bitch.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Yeah, oh, man, boy. Choose your battles, because everybody told me, oh, just pay that thing, make it go away. And I was like, no, we weren't that. That doesn't even make sense. It was a whole fucking...
I used to always go to court and contest tickets.
Yes.
And tickets always sort of come, like you can go for a couple of years without getting one. I'm going to touch wood now.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you get one and you go, oh no, I'll get two more.
Right.
So I would always go to court because it was always like 50-50 whether the guy would show up or not.
Right.
Sometimes it did. And then it seems like, you know, they were showing up more frequently. And whenever they show up, it's kind of hard to win that battle on.
Because it's he said, or she
yeah,
said.
Yeah, and you know, they've always got the radar calibrated and certified.
Oh, but this wasn't even a speeding ticket.
I know.
This was you went in the exit. Right, like, yeah. No, we didn't.
Right, that's kind of nuts.
Yeah, if it was like, oh, I got you for 83, and I was doing 75. I mean, that's like, whatever. I would have paid that and made it go away. Yeah. We did 11,100 miles. And the only ticket we got was for going in the exit of a... You know how much speeding we did on that trip?
You were lucky. Aren't you guys going back on the road again in the yellow car?
Well, the plan was to. Yeah, the plan was to. Quite frankly, everything right now is sort of up in the air. Everything is really, really tough.
Well, one day at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. The goal was to get out for... we committed to her parents to be in...
Yeah, I remember seeing.
Up in Rochester, New York for Christmas. So maybe we'll invite them here. We'll see. Hey, and we'll do it up at Newcomb's.
Do it at Newcomb's. Christmas dinner at Newcomb's sounds really good to me. Bring your own.
We'll invite Freddie, right?
Yeah, of course we'll invite Freddie. Someone's got to turn the oven on and warm up the food, right?
All right, well, Vegas. We're back to Vegas. You brought up Vegas.
Yeah, F1. I'm going.
You are going.
I'm going on Thursday.
Were you invited, or did you somehow swing some $50,000 ticket?
Well, that's kind of nuts. I was invited, so I'm going on that. And then, of course, just yesterday, Red Bull reaches out with some passes to whatever their media suites are.
Oh, pardon me. Well, I'm enjoying my coconut Red Bull right now, which is my new obsession.
Yeah. So, you know, of course, you know, they send you tickets, but of course, they're in Ticketmaster. You know, and I forgot my password to Ticketmaster, right? So
you've
got to set up
shits.
A new account or, you know, reboot your password on Ticketmaster to get your tickets to the Red Bull Hospitality.
Because your tickets are on your phone now, so you need to access something.
Exactly.
You
know, I didn't want to have a Ticketmaster account. This happened to me at NASCAR at the Coliseum back in January.
Okay.
Someone's giving me tickets to NASCAR. So I think they're physically giving me a ticket or your name's at will call. You're on some sort of list,
Same page.
No, you know, it's through Ticketmaster, and you got to set up an account.
Download the app.
You know, I'm trying to disconnect from downloading all these apps and putting all your information in.
Yeah, that's all it is. They want the info.
Yeah, and so I didn't even realize I still had an active Ticketmaster account. Red Bull goes, oh, you've got a Ticketmaster account. I go, how do they even know that? I don't even know if my Ticketmaster account is like...
You saw Pink Floyd in 85.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I'm rambling, but yeah. Vegas is going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a real shit show getting around. You know, there does seem to be a lot, if you're looking out there now, that all these million-dollar packages and $100,000 packages are crumbling.
They are?
Yeah, because people got greedy and just thought, oh, it's Vegas. Everyone will spend all the money in the world.
Yes.
You know, perfect example would be, let's say a hotel, I don't know, call it Circus, right? That might be a $99 a night hotel.
On a normal
night. On a normal night. For F1, it's... $2,000 for four nights. So, you know, it's $500 a night with a four-night minimum.
At Circus.
Yeah, that type of thing. So, and I guess people, you know, they just thought people were going to pay all the money in the world to go there. All these pit passes and paddock passes and everything was just way overpriced to the point where now, with a few days to go, things are bargain basement, close out, you know.
So that's what's going on.
Hasn't sold out. Tickets are still available. Hotel rates are back down to somewhat normal. You know, because they're trying to sort of, you know, do a last-minute cash grab.
I think you're right about all of that. It seems like they, some people will just pay whatever the fuck. But maybe they overestimated the percentage.
Well, I think people paid, you know, these exorbitant packages of whether it's $25,000 to $1 million a year ago when Vegas was the hot ticket, the first time Vegas has had an F1 since the 80s when it went through Caesars Park, you know, car park. You know, it was a big deal, but I think now that reality struck, you know, Verstappen's already champion, Red Bull's already won the manufacturer's championship, there's nothing really to race for. The spectacle of, you know, Vegas might have worn a little bit thin.
You're right, the championship's already decided.
Already done. It's a night race, it starts at 10 and goes to midnight, so, you know, this is all sort of... That timing set up for the rest of the world who really cares about F1.
You know,
people are going to tell you, oh, you know, Americans are watching more F1, which statistically might be right. They're all going to say it's due to the Netflix Drive to Survive show, which it probably is. But, you know, the rest of the world still is more involved and passionate about F1 than the US is. And I think the fact that the Grand Prix hasn't sold out with, like, you know, 72 hours to go before it begins, there's still tickets available. And I think the fact that a lot of promoters and hotels and, you know, hospitality places got really greedy, thinking people would spend all the money in the world, has sort of backfired a little bit. And then it's going to be cold because Vegas gets cold at nighttime. I don't think anyone had really factored that in. Then logistically, it's going to be hard to get around because, you know, the access is going to be super limited. And then the bit that gets me is I kind of thought start and finish would be on the strip, right, in front of Bellagio or something. But it's not. That's kind of like the back stretch and start and finish is around the corner.
What on earth?
Down on the back end of like the Sands Convention Center as it, you know, sort of winds its way to the sphere. But the start and finish is not on the strip.
That's so, none of this is how I thought it would be when it was discussed.
No.
And I thought the nighttime was a heat thing. I didn't realize it was timing for the rest of the world.
I think it's timing for the rest of the world. I think now they're realizing, oh, it's going to be like in the 40s.
Yeah, you're right, because they race in Abu Dhabi and every other damn place. Yeah, okay.
So, you know, it's kind of like if it continues, you might want to move the night race in Vegas to, you know, when it's actually a little bit warmer. So anyway, that's Vegas coming up.
I'm sure they'll learn a lot from their first outing.
Yeah, first time trial. But, you know, also there's like three Grand Prix in the U.S. these days. You know, COTA down in Texas, which has been around, I don't know, 10 years. Then Miami, which is in its second year.
Right.
And now Vegas. This might be one too many.
Mm.
There's a lot of Grand Prix, even though America obviously is a big country.
And Long Beach, while they call it a Grand Prix, hasn't actually been the Grand Prix for a long time, right?
No, but
they haven't been running.
I love the Long Beach Grand Prix, you know, which is now an Indy race. But back in the 70s, that same track was an F1 track, you know, when they went down Shoreline Drive in the F1 cars. So I still love Long Beach Grand Prix. There's a Formula Drift that happens at the same time. To me, that's just a great venue. You know, it's a street course. It's actually legitimately been going for over 40 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not just some makeshift. I mean, it's a temporary course that they put up, but it's got a lot of history to it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, forget that it's local to us. I actually really like it because it is so cool. Right. I used to watch it on television when I was a kid.
And logistically, you can get around. It's all around the convention center. There's plenty of things to do for the kids and the family. You know, the fact that it goes by the water, you know, to me, it's pretty scenic.
That one I like. Once you're in the infield, you can kind of be everywhere. Yeah. It's not so separated.
I don't find it hard getting around the Long Beach Grand Prix. Like, I think Vegas is going to be. You're kind of going to feel boxed in.
It's going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you think they did that start-finish thing because they didn't want the nuts on the strip? Or was there more room?
I think probably what it was always when they start-finish is where the pits are. And obviously there was no room to have the pits there. Over the. I guess they could have put them over the Bellagio fountain. But what they did instead was, you know, that's where the, you know, million-dollar grandstands are.
Right.
So generally where the start-finish is, that whole stretch is pit in, pit out.
Has the event grown? Is it
You okay?
Bigger.
You're all right. I got it.
Got to pinch that.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, you're okay.
Is it bigger?
Is it bigger? I don't know if it's bigger. I mean, it just seems logistically very challenged at this point. So it's going to be interesting to see how the race is on Saturday. Yeah. You know, of course, it's way past my bedtime. It means I got to stay up past midnight.
Did you know, for a little happy, we watched Rain Man the other day, the where Rain Man drives slow on the driveway through Caesar's Palace, that used to be part of the track.
I mean, everything used to happen in the car park at Caesar's Palace. Evel Knievel.
Oh, I forgot when he jumped the fountain.
Yeah, that was Caesar's.
Was that Evel or that was Evel, wasn't it?
Evel Knievel, because he crashed, I think, at Caesar's Palace. On that big drum. Yeah.
I remember the Snake River. That was a disaster.
Yeah. Can I chime in with a comment?
Please. Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
Canada
hey.
Mike.
Hey, Magnus. Nice to see
you.
By
doing?
The way, Magnus, I love the way you say camaraderie. Anyway.
Good to know.
The Plig.
I've been practicing.
The Plig has said there has been a recent worry that has popped up with how this is basically going to be the coldest race in recent memory, and the teams aren't going to be prepared, especially the tires.
That's right. No heat in the tires. Because there's a lot of long straights and not a lot of tight corners that are going to scrub heat into the tires, I think the people over at Pirelli are going to be choosing the softest compounds, which probably will interesting.
They can only use them a certain time, right? There's only certain percentages.
Right. And imagine if it rains. It's supposed to rain in LA over the next couple of days, right? Imagine if it rains in Vegas on Saturday on the race.
Oh, my Lord.
Could you imagine that?
Well, no, but isn't it probably going to happen?
If it rains here, it might rain
That's
in
the
Vegas.
That's the way the weather system goes. Yeah. Oh, my Lord.
I'm always checking the weather because, you know, rain means leaky roof that I still haven't fixed over there at the Raccoon Shack.
Mitch David Carter says, hi, everybody. So good to see you.
Good to be here. Thanks, right. Mitch. So, yeah, that's Vegas. Time will tell. It's
going
to be...
When are you going out?
Thursday.
Oh, wow. Are you coming straight back?
Coming back Sunday, so we're there for some time.
Oh, man. Where are you staying?
I'm staying at the Wynn, actually, of all places.
Well, that's nice, at least because you're a block off the strip, right?
Well, the Wynn's on the strip, but it's kind of like right next to where the course is.
Oh, okay.
Do you gamble?
I do not. I've been going to Vegas for 30 years. I actually like Vegas. I was going there doing this thing called the Magic Show clothing. It's not a magic show, but it's called the Magic Show.
Ta-da!
Yeah, exactly. So I don't, to answer your question, I don't gamble, but I love going to Vegas. Like when I first went to Vegas in the 90s, we're still at the end of the era of the old school.
Some of the old ones were still
there. Hotel, the Frontier.
Yes.
It was right before the first wave of mega-themed, you know, like Treasure Island and Luxor, the Pyramid. And I remember when all those came in, I caught the tail end of the tired old Vegas Rat Pack era, mm-hmm. which was still cool.
And
then it's sort of like late 80s, early 90s. And then sort of by mid 90s, you were seeing Caesar's Palace and Venetian and these mega hotels. But if you look back on Vegas on these archival photos from like the glory days, I guess, of 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. it looks really empty compared to today.
Oh, God,
like 500 rooms was a big hotel.
Yeah.
Now you got like 3,000, 4,000 room mega complexes.
Huge.
And the thing with Vegas is you always end up walking miles. It's great to get your steps in because it looks like it's just there, but in reality it's like...
That's a mile and a half.
Yeah, at least.
To the staircase.
Right. And then it's the classic case of driving in Vegas and trying to find a place to park in the in the hotel.
Now
and then trying to find your way through the casino.
The nice thing about Vegas parking was it used to at least all be free everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now it's not, right? I heard that now when you go to Vegas, all the casinos charge, even for the self-park?
Probably. I mean,
that's crazy.
Last time I drove to Vegas was actually last year for SEMA.
I mean, if you're going to valet out front or whatever, then I get you're paying one way or the other.
Right? It makes sense, but man, that sucks.
I mean, I go out and do the SEMA show.
Yeah.
And the old Hilton is next to the convention center.
Mm-hmm.
And the old Hilton is where Elvis played. You know, so that's still got that old world charm.
Is that like the only one left, though? Because the Trop and the Sandal, all that stuff
is gone. There's a few downtown, like the Jackie Gons Plaza and the Flamingo's still there.
Yeah, that Plaza.
Hilton, yeah, right. The Hilton's no longer called the Hilton. I forget what it's called, but it's
Bally's
pretty much
is
the
gone,
same.
Right? Those,
yeah,
those ones
yeah,
are
those
gone.
Have all gone, you know. And then the ones that are surviving that are probably 20 years old, like the Stratosphere, they're just really tired. And the Rio and...
I remember when that was new.
Yeah, I do too. You know,
I remember when the Rio was brand new.
Right. You know,
you're
and that was...
staying at the Wynn, right? The Wynn?
Wynn Hotel.
You're
yeah. yeah, I'm staying at the Wynn.
Sorry, that's where I stayed with Richter when it opened.
Oh, the Wynn, okay.
With who?
Andy Richter.
Andy Richter.
Yeah, that was probably like
sorry,
a dozen
that's
years ago.
That's all my head thought about.
15 years ago, but
probably at least, yeah, 15,
that's,
20.
It's around the same time frame.
Yeah, well... I remember when the Hard Rock Hotel opened.
Me too.
And that was kind of the place to go.
Yep.
And then that actually went out of business. I think now it's a Virgin Hotel.
Get the fuck out of here.
I drove past it like 2 weeks ago.
They had they had that live music venue where everybody would come play
yeah.
right off the casino.
Right. Didn't John Entwistle from The Who overdose on cocaine and actually die at the Hard Rock
yeah,
Hotel?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. And they had all the cool sort of memorabilia,
yeah.
you know, of all the outfits and guitars.
Everywhere, all through the lobby.
And that was the cool place to go, the Hard Rock. And
the
even
bar
that
was right in the center of
right.
a big round casino. I used to love that place.
So that is now a Virgin Hotel.
No shit. Yeah. And they had the one suite that had
the bowling alley.
The bowling alley,
yeah.
yeah.
Got to have a theme suite in Vegas.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
I only went to the bowling alley, the real world. Sweet.
I went to that one too at the Palms. That was over by the Rio,
Palm.
Yeah.
Do you remember the bowling alley on Santa Monica Boulevard that's in Big Lebowski?
Yeah.
It's no longer there, I guess.
Yeah. Apparently, the stars that are from the outside, the decor,
where
is hanging in Lucky Strike in Hollywood.
Oh, it is.
On the wall. Apparently, all those stars are the ones from... That had a name. Was it Hollywood Bowl? No, it couldn't be Hollywood Bowl.
Hollywood Lanes, maybe?
Hollywood Lanes, yeah.
It was great because you could drink and bowl, right, until you sort of sprained your wrist, and then it was game over.
We were on the west side forever, so we would do it over on 4th Street. It was Pico Bowl.
Oh, in Santa Monica?
Yeah.
I remember that one.
Yeah,
right Pico off the 10th Freeway.
Exactly. And you could, I mean, it blocks from the water.
Yeah, that had been there forever.
Same thing. It was old and divey. It's probably all fancy and nice now.
Probably. There's probably one somewhere out in the valley, right, all the way at the top end of Van Nuys Boulevard that's still old and divey.
They're all going away. The Pickwick Bowl just shut or is shut, and they're going to tear it down. And that old roller rink, whatever that was called, that one's gone. Like, all the stuff is gone.
Did you guys ever go to Bob's Big Boy? It's right around the corner, Friday night. Did you ever go there?
We used to go there. Nights are hard for us to do anything these days. But I'll go with you if you want.
I see Derek occasionally goes.
Derek and a couple people we know.
What is going on with Stupid Car? I see he's got that up for sale.
I know. How about that?
Yeah.
I'm hoping we find out on Friday.
I kind of like that car.
Kind of like it?
Yeah.
It was the first OPP, wasn't it?
It was the first OPP. Wasn't the first one I shot, but it was the first one we had. Yeah, I kind of like it. That car just sort of ticked a lot of boxes.
It's
I like his Fox Body Mustang he's got brewing.
Me too.
Yeah. I do like that.
I haven't seen or heard that run yet.
Yeah. It looks good, though.
It does. It looks great.
You don't really need to run. It just looks great.
Well, you're 935. Like, it looks so good.
Yeah. All show, no go. Like,
well, that's what you said. Yeah. Those are your words.
Just needs a big motor, and it doesn't have a big motor.
Speaking of big, do we want to talk about the big announcement? You've got huge news.
Huge news. Yeah. Big news.
Dun, 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 dun.
Drum roll, here we go. So I'm teaming up with TWR. I don't know if you're familiar with Tom Wilkinshaw Racing. They were sort of big in the 80s, 90s. They were like Jaguar's motorsports racing team.
Okay.
You know, they raced touring car.
Like the M division for Jag kind of thing?
Sort of, yeah. They were like the official race team. You know, like Porsche Racing, Porsche Motorsports in Europe is run by Manthony. It's not actually Porsche. So TWR was that for Jag.
Okay.
So they raced a lot with a lot of success in that period. They also helped develop the XJR15 and the XJ220, amongst other cars. And then the company hadn't sort of been trading in the past 20 years. Old man passes away. The son, Ferguson, basically resurrects the company. And ironically, I'd wanted to do a hot rod Jag for years. You know, I've owned E-types, and like the unloved Jag really is the XJS, the car that replaced the E-type in 75. So it's like hard to follow in the footsteps of, you know, this iconic car, the E-type Jag.
Everyone says that, but the XJS is actually my favorite looking. I prefer the look of it. Those buttresses in the back, I love it.
I like it too, but you know, it just wasn't the E-type.
Mm.
So, you know, the kind of was, I'm not going to say misunderstood, but you know, they haven't really survived the test of time too well. So TWR raced those. They already had a sort of a street division based around the race car with modifications, body kit, you know, slightly different fenders and flares and bumpers and stuff like that. So what I'd wanted to do was do a hot rod sort of outlaw version of an XJS for at least 5 years, to the point where when Ian Callum was still designing for Jag, I spoke to him about it. And he'd done his own hot rod version of an XJ6 coupe, the two-door XJ. And they did Jag Classic did a really killer one for Nico McBain, the drummer of Iron Maiden.
Okay.
And this is like 2018 when I'm talking to these guys. And they thought the idea was great. And then I couldn't find anyone. Like, I didn't want to spend the money that Jag Classic would charge me to actually do one. And I figured, how hard can it be? You know, I've modified a lot of Porsches, but there's not a lot of availability of people that actually work on Jags or want to work on Jags in LA. I was having a hard time.
Especially custom work like that, right?
Yeah, finding someone who was interested in the project. So I kind of aborted the project, backburned it.
How long have you had the car?
Well, I've had the E-types a couple of years. The XJS, I only got maybe 9 months ago. But here's a part of the story. I get this literally email from, this dude over at TWR that had just put in the package together and said, hey, would you be interested in getting involved in this project? And I always say timing is everything. I go, yeah, I've actually wanted to do this project myself for like the past 5 years and it never happened. And so they bring me on board, and then I approach Keisel, you know, the designer, and because, you know, I've got an idea, but he's really the guy who designs stuff. You know, I'm like doodling on a napkin type of thing. And, you know, he's doing full-on CAD drawings and making stuff really functionally look cool and function as well.
I mean, this is what he did. This is what he does.
Yeah. So I approached him. I'd met him before. I met him last year. He came out to SEMA, came down to visit me when I was doing my Peterson exhibition. And it was always like, we should do something together. And then literally 2 months after that meeting last year, I get approached by TWR. I'm like, I'm all in, but I can only do so much. I know how to do my own version of my own car, but I think we can actually do more if we bring the Kaiser in. So I get a hold of Kaiser, and he's all on board to do it as well. Because there's a lot of heritage behind TWR. This is a company that's actually won at Le Mans. Whoa. You know, helped develop the iconic XJ220, XJR15. They even raced Volvo. So, you know, they've done other stuff other than Jag. So, you know, to me, it was like, wow, doing something with these guys is going to be great. It's going to be great doing something that's not a Porsche. You know, I've modified quite a lot of Porsches. So we'll actually do something with the original people that put this mark on the map, you know, back in the 80s, sort of the glory days of the XJS era, really, was just sort of like the stars were aligning.
Oh, yeah.
So there's been a year of backwards and forwards. I actually visited their facility on my way back from Norway when I shot that 917 OPP episode.
Congrats on that one, by the way. That was awesome.
Yeah, that one did pretty good. I hooked up with them after Goodwood Festival of Speed. So the ball is rolling. It's going to be based around an XJS. And that's about all I can say at this moment.
I can't even imagine what it looks like in your head. I know what it looks like in my head right now.
What it looks like in my head and what it looks like on my phone over here are pretty similar. And I think people are going to be surprised. I mean, ultimately, I think there's a market for it. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, tweaking other cars, not necessarily Jags, but Porsches and, you know, Lanciers and various other things.
Beamer, Mercedes.
Yeah. So, you know, the whole world is out there modifying these classics, and no one had ever really done it with an XJS. So 2024 is sort of going to be the big unveil.
The guy at the Shell station at the bottom of the hill has got that Mercedes, the old SL. Do you know the one I'm talking about that's got the flares and everything? Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Superb looking car. I have no idea how it drives. I don't know anything about the build. I don't know anything about it. I think he bought it that way. I don't think he bought
it. Ironically, there's been quite a lot of SL Mercedes sort of wide-bodied, you know, touring car body kits out there, and I like that look.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like AMG on steroids.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm pretty excited.
It's like AMG
this.
Do it yourself, which I kind of like. I DIY, like the riveted fenders
DIY
and shit.
DIY AMG.
I'm into that.
So, yeah, we announced this thing. TWR sort of announced the launch, the rebirth, a couple of weeks ago, and we're rolling out these little teasers as to what's coming next. So, yesterday was the unveil of Kaiser and I. He's chief designer. I'm design consultant.
You were not at Newcomb's last Friday, right?
No.
Okay, he was.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, he came up with Farah, I think.
Yeah, I saw him the day before. So he was down doing promo shoots at the warehouse the day before.
Ah, of course.
I forget what I was doing Friday, but I was doing something.
Oh, I didn't mean anything by it.
But he'd gone up there. He's a cool guy, super talented.
I didn't get to meet him.
Super down to earth. He's like 6'6" tall.
Yep.
He's tall. It makes me look sort of small. But it's been great working with him. Like, you know, just we're kind of on the same wavelength. You know, we've got our ideas, and then, you know.
Where's he from?
He's English.
Oh, okay.
Sort of from the Midlands.
So I get the same.
Yeah, similar vibe. TWR is based in England. Cars will be made in England, and then sort of.
I looked at it quickly. Out. I saw my. I'm a little dyslexic. I saw TVR, and I was like, wait, what the hell?
TWR.
Yeah, a little different.
Yeah, close. Same, but different.
So what's the timeline? I mean, is this something people should start getting excited about now, or is this early stages and you're figuring it out and there's design?
We're a year into it. You know, my sort of goal is don't release a car till the car's actually drivable and ready to go.
Got it.
You know, you see a lot of concept cars that don't really run, that barely run off a trailer and get pushed around and, you know.
Sometimes it's not even a real car.
Yeah, a lot of times just a clay model, right? You know, and the wheels roll, but there's no steering. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, my sort of goal is we need to, you can only make a launch once. So in my mind, the car should be drivable. You know, it's kind of like my one beef with SEMA. There's a lot of cool cars at SEMA that don't run. I'm always asking people, how does it run? Oh, I don't know. We only finished it last night. You know, first time I did SEMA, I drove 277 there. And the claim to fame was I drove the car to SEMA, displayed it, and drove it back.
Perfect.
So with the Jag with TWR, I'm under the thought process that We need to show, we can show renderings of the car, but, you know, all the back engineering's already been in the development process of the drivetrain, the engine, you know, and getting all that sort of dynoed and ready to go. You know, the renderings are done, you know, the body kit's sort of getting, molds are getting made, and then it's just a matter of putting that all together for what will be a show car that'll come sometime in 2024.
Obviously, you're a driver. I always call you a driver first. Is he a driver too, or is he more just, I mean, he's obviously one hell of a designer.
No, he drives as well. I think design is his focus, but he likes to drive.
Okay, that's great.
You know, he's a man in demand. He's all over the world. He's driving.
No,
around.
I didn't mean anything by it. I just, you know what I mean? Sometimes form over function, and I'm not that guy. Function. I like the function.
I would say he's a driver. You know, the goal we have when that car is done, there's going to be a UK car and a US car. I can say that.
Okay.
So, you know, one will be left-hand drive.
One's on one side, one's on the other.
Yeah, one will be left-hand drive, one will be right-hand drive. You know, I'm taking the left-hand drive one. And, you know, there's a road trip plan where Keisel and I will, you know, go drive around in the car.
Cool.
You know, and basically, you know, do a lot of cars and coffees and, you know, have people see the car.
Awesome.
My whole thing is the car needs to move. It needs to be driven. So, you know, I'm excited. It's a process. You know, I'm a year into it already. You know, they're obviously a lot longer into it, but this is just the beginnings.
But you've been working on this in the background, sitting on it the whole time.
Kept a secret, yeah.
Good job.
You know, there'd be like monthly Zoom calls. And like I say, I've been to England twice, under the radar. So yeah, you know, you got to keep a secret. I mean, for me, like, it'd be tempting to pull out my phone and go, hey, look at what it looks like. But I'm going to save that for, you know, they have official days of, you know, when they want to launch things. So,
yeah, do you have a number in mind as far as how many of these will be built? Are they made to order? Is it as many as people want?
They're going to be made to order. You know, it's not going to be unlimited. It'll be a set amount. We haven't figured out, you know, if that's one or if it's, you know, 100 or 1 million.
Right.
We don't really know yet.
Okay.
You know, it's too early to sort of say, you know, it's one of this or one of that.
Can you tell us how many Nike sneakers they made? Of your Magnus Outlaw 277?
Nike would never tell me how many of these were made.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
But what is the reason for that? Is it because they give so many away for promos and stuff?
Well, I gave all mine away. You know, I ended up.
Are you out now? Pretty close.
Did you hear the story about my shoe?
Oh, maybe. No, I don't think so.
So this is my third pair. You know, back to walking 12 miles a day. For the past 2 years, all I've worn is this. And 6 miles a day is like, you know, at the end of the year.
You used to keep wearing them out on the...
Yeah. I'd done over 2,000 miles in each pair.
Oh! So, run, Forrest!
Yeah, exactly. So out of my stash, I kept two pairs for myself. So when the second pair was basically really wearing out where I could walk on a paperclip and feel it, mm-hmm. I'm like, I got to go to the third pair. So I go to the brand new pair, get it out of the box, put it on. I go, fuck, it's too tight. I go, this makes no sense. It was an 11. So I pull out the original one and find out I'm actually in an 11 and a half.
Oh.
So at this point,
so you
I'm
kept
like,
the wrong size.
Kept the wrong size.
Oh,
I thought I was
no.
11. Didn't keep the 11 and a half. So at this point, I go, well, creatively, I could have a little Instagram contest. Hey, looking to trade an 11 for an 11 and a half. Who wants to do a trade?
Most people haven't probably even worn theirs.
Yeah, dead, like, right, new old stock. But I thought this is just going to be a little bit crazy. So here's the killer part to the story. A lot of people come up to me and go, hey, wish I could get you shoes, but they're all sold out. So for my birthday, Hannah bought me a pair of my own shoes StockX. So to all those people out there that say, hey, I love your shoe, but I can't get them. Yes, you can. You know, Hannah bought for me for my birthday, my own pair of shoes off of StockX. And that's the pair I'm wearing right here.
Unbelievable.
Which kind of seems nuts. But once they're gone, it's not like I could call Nike and go, hey, do you happen to have a few 11 and a halves laying around that I can trade into? So yeah, it's kind of nuts. You know, I didn't buy them, but Hannah bought them for me.
They do, though, you know.
Yeah. So I do have two pairs of 11. So if anyone's listening out there that's got an 11 and a half and wants to trade,
there you go.
You know, in about a year, this will be wearing out. So I better plan ahead now.
Great, because you have a fresh set of 11s
at home. I have
two
pairs of 11s, yeah.
Two pairs of 11s.
Two pairs of 11s. I thought I'm going to be good for 5 years in my own shoe.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, the only reason I don't wear yours is because I used to really like wearing them to special occasions, but they only look good fresh at the special occasion.
Boy,
so then
boy,
I was
boy.
Doing that. I was then I became a preservationist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not
you know
me.
What I mean? It's
not
the opposite
me.
Of you.
Yeah, I started wearing these in July. So what is that, 4 months?
That's actually really good. I feel like your first two pairs went quicker.
Yeah, maybe this is only 3 months. But I'm doing a lot of steps in them. You know, they're just comfy, you know. So I'm the lightweight, the comfy, I can drive in them real easy. But I'm a creature of habit. It's like before the Nike, I was wearing the Doc Martens, and I went through the similar thing. I had like 5 rotating pairs of Doc Martens.
Yeah.
And then before that, I was in some other shoe. So I find one thing I'm comfortable in, I just wear it all the time.
Well, we need to get you some 11 and a halfs of your own shoes. Yeah. That is hilarious. I had to buy my own.
Not buying any more off of StockX, I'll tell you.
That's
that.
What can I ask how much were they? What are they going for?
They vary. I mean, on the low end, the kind of, you know, originally they retailed for $119.
Wow.
That was retail if you could get
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
At the peak, they were up to $1,000. I think Hannah paid like $399 for them.
I saw them for $1,500 the week they were first.
It all depends on the size as well. Like certain sizes are more desirable than others. Like an 11, like 10 to 12 is the desirable size frame. Like people that wear 7s or 6s, they're hard to find, but not necessarily desirable.
That's exactly what you said. You said, what size are you? I said 11. You go, oh, popular size.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I literally gave them all away, and then I'm like, fuck. How could I have missed my own size?
But isn't that what it was all about, though, the giving them away? Receiving that box from you was so cool. I really felt like I was in on something special.
The coolest thing I ever actually did was, I don't know if you were familiar with the scavenger hunt that I did.
Oh, yeah. Downtown?
Yeah. So, you know, I'd take one. I'd have a little Instagram post. I'm going to leave it somewhere. Here's a hint. When you find it, if you want to get the matching pair, you got to DM me, come and meet me, and then I'll give you the left to the right type
of thing.
Go
hide one somewhere, like up in a bridge thing or up on it, you know, somewhere in public, and then take a weird picture. Yeah. And then whoever found it has to send, oh, okay, here I got it. All right, come on down to the warehouse.
The first one I did was at the Broad, you know, next to the Disney Center, that white structure outside.
Yeah.
I just stuck it there. Then the next one I did was...
Was it just, you could see it from the street, just up there?
Well, it was kind of on the inside of it, not the sidewalk side. So people would realize, oh, that's the Broad, but yet where exactly on the Broad was it?
Then they'd have to go find
it. Yeah, and then I did another one on the 4th Street Bridge because 6th Street Bridge wasn't finished yet. So it was obvious it was the 4th Street Bridge, but it's a pretty long bridge. And that one, there were like 35, 40 people just at the same place at the same time trying to find it. So it created this buzz.
Well, yeah, you could have started fights downtown and shit.
Yeah, so I did
that's
that
my sneaker.
I did that a few times, and ironically, the last pair that I've got is for Tommy Kendall, if he's watching here. Tommy Kendall's like a Bigfoot. He's like a size 13, and I literally had one size 13, and he asked me, hey, can I get a pair? I go, yeah, sure, what size? You're 13, and like by a miracle, I actually had one 13, because hardly anyone is a size 13.
Right.
But yeah, he never came to get him. I go, you got to come down the warehouse and get him. He's a busy guy. But anyway, Tommy.
I know somebody who's a 12 and a half or a 13.
What's that?
I know somebody who's a 12 and a half or a 13. I know somebody.
Oh, you're a sneaker collector who happens to be a 12 and a half or 13?
Yeah. Well, yeah. If TK never comes for his 13s, they are gathering dust.
How many sneakers do you have, Mike, there? Or how many pairs?
I have 44 pairs of Jordans.
Wow. Wow.
Lordy.
I almost bought your shoe. But it was a 12. I can do a 12 in that one. There's one a pair in my city, Kelowna, for sale for $750 Canadian right now.
Wow.
But they don't quite fit.
Oh, yeah, that's more.
Is it? Is Canadian more?
I think it's more, right?
No,
No. That's like $1.50 US. No, it's about, that'd be about 550 US.
Oh, I see. Oh, it goes the other way. All right.
Yeah. There's a pair for sale here right now.
Gotta go get them in Canada, I guess.
I'm trying to think. When was the last time I saw you outside of? I missed you. It seems like we have a lot of missed connections. You came to Breakfast Club at Site B. I was in Yellow Card doing something with somebody else.
I saw you at Breakfast Club like Friday before last.
Yeah, I know, but I was holding Willow, and I don't know. When was the last time you were here? Do you remember?
I think over a year ago, because I hadn't started doing OPP yet.
And that's been a year?
Well, I started it when the Peterson exhibition ended January 31st. The very next sort of day was the first episode of OPP, which was Stupid Car.
Wow.
So I actually started shooting them probably 4 months before Stupid Car came out. The challenge was finding a team, you know, and now I'm sort of down to one guy, Pavel, who's great because he shoots and edits, and we're kind of in sync now.
He's a great guy, too.
Yeah, really talented. So that was the last time I was here. I mean, talking about OPP, I've shot 24 episodes, 21 are out.
Wow.
I just shot one a couple of weeks ago. It's going to be great with Estevan Oriol.
Mm-hmm.
So him and I are driving around in a Cayenne, and it's nothing really to do with the new Cayenne, which his buddies sort of, you know, did a street artwork paint job on it in 2 hours. It's more his story. And, of course, I go in the L.A. River and various other places, and just this juxtaposition of most people probably wouldn't expect him and I in that car together talking about L.A. culture, street art, you know, 90s hip-hop bands and lowrider scenes.
That's cool.
So that's what's happening there.
But you're right. It's a weird car for it. That's cool.
Kind of
cool.
A weird car. I take it off-road. I'm enjoying doing them. You know, the one that's currently out, surprisingly, is doing really good on this white collection of, you know, the 50 white Porsches down in Houston.
This is the only time you're not driving the cars, right?
Well, no. Like, when I did one with Cam Ingram on Pike's Peak, which is a great episode, I didn't drive that car either.
Yeah.
But at least the car was being driven in the episode. This is the first episode where there's no motion at all. And it's the longest one. It's 40 minutes long. And it's a rambling deep dive that for me was a bit of a gamble, not a gamble, but an experiment to see if people would be interested in listening to me ramble on about cars that don't get driven.
See, he doesn't gamble, he experiments.
I experiment. And, you know, 1 week in, this thing's got almost 250,000 views.
Wow.
And I only have barely 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. So it seems people are interested. It's an oddball collection of over 50 white Porsches.
Is maybe that part of it? There's so many cars in it that it just keeps people's attention or something?
I think so. And people are just like fascinated about. So love, hate. Like, you know, he's got a 918 with 12 miles on it. So, of course, a lot of people are like, why would you own a car if you don't drive it type of thing.
I bet your batteries are dead.
Yeah. So everyone's got an opinion.
Yeah.
But there's some great, you know. Everyone's like, well, why is he an 0959 and Carrera GT? Well, he actually had those cars and sold them before this batch are going to auction.
Oh, wow.
Coming up in Houston like on December 1st. So I'm enjoying making these OPPs. You know, it's a fascinating thing. You know, what I've learned is it's the same amount of effort to shoot like a 917 as a 914.
Mm-hmm.
But yet maybe more people are interested in a 917 than they are a 914. So I'm chasing down some what I think are interesting cars, but certain things, like I have a buddy who has two of these, you know, 991, 935, you know, the slant nose, he only made 77 of them based on the GT2.
Came out 2 years ago or something.
It came out 5 years ago, believe it or not, at the last Rents Point in 2018. That's what COVID does for you.
Fine.
So that was based on the 991 GT2. Porsche just launched the new one at Rents Point this year.
Got it.
But it's a classic case of they're only making 77 of these cars. They're not homologated for any race series, but they're not street legal either. So, you know, I have a buddy, ironically, has two in raw carbon that I really wanted to do an OPP on, but they have no miles on them. They're still in the wrapper type of thing, so mm-hmm. he doesn't want to drive them.
Mm.
So sometimes, you know, it's a challenge to find an interesting car that someone actually wants you to drive.
Right. Ugh, frustrating.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, like the 917 in Norway, stars just aligned, and I drove that car for 300 kilometers in 1 day.
The locations.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a better looking video on the internet? I don't know.
I mean,
it's tough.
That just kind of came together. Yeah, it was great. That's the most viewed one. So far.
The thumbnail alone.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't not click on that.
And it was so last minute, that thing. None of these are scripted. None of these episodes are scripted or, you know, there's no location scouting. You know, I'm doing them myself, meaning, you know, there's no sponsorship behind it by any corporation. It's just me sort of doing my own thing. So they're shot on a real limited budget. And they're all kind of just winged as to, like the 917 only sort of came together at the last minute. Yeah, the stars aligned, so I'm enjoying doing them. That's what OPP is all about. Other people's Porsches. We're going to do the yellow car on OPP.
I can't wait.
Up
I know that back in March or whenever you first asked me, I think there was a couple things we were trying to iron out, and then we did our trip.
Yeah,
but
you
we're
guys
back.
Are doing some mods and a louder exhaust and all types of things, and then you drove cross country.
TLG built a hell of a car. I think you'll have a good time. I know you can drive anything at any time, but I think you'll
I think the yellow car will be a good episode. We got to get into Newcombs and shoot something there.
That's what I was thinking.
Do it midweek.
We talked way back when about driving 277 and 111 up there. Has anybody driven 277 on OPP? Because I'm thinking we should both drive and then talk about it at the bar.
Well, you know, I did that thing years ago with Sun Kang from Fast and Furious called Furious Outlaws, where I drove his Fuguzi Datsun.
Yeah.
And he drove 277. And then recently I did this show with Nicole Johnson, who's a monster truck driver and King of Hammers rock crawler. And she's got a show that's pretty cool. And she drove 277 in the Crest, probably, I don't know, that show came out about, or episode came out about a month ago.
Got it.
So people have driven 277 in the crest somewhat recently.
But OPP, that girl just reached out to me because of a video I had, and she wanted to shoot the car that was in a video that I put.
She's very cool. I guess she's the first female to do a backflip on Monster Jam, you know, big, you know, big truck thing. And then her background's wheeling, off-road, and King of Hammers type stuff.
Cool.
So that's the story with 277. But yeah, let's get Yellow Car on.
I just see us sitting at the bar talking about it.
Yeah, it'd be great. Christmas dinner style.
Ah, yeah. Let's do
it. Yeah, with a tree on the roof. Have you put a tree on the roof of that?
Yeah.
Christmas card
style? Yeah. There was a whole, I think a whole season we left it up there, remember? It wasn't even our tree. Somebody bought a tree, put it on their Porsche, brought it up to Breakfast Club for the photo.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they were going to just
leave it.
They were going to leave it. They didn't like driving with the tree on. And I said, well, you're not leaving the tree up here. Yeah. Just throw it on here. I'll bring it home for her. Yeah. And then we liked it on the car, so we left it for the whole season.
All right.
You know, Auto Kennel, he's kind of dresses his cars.
Yeah. Paul's a great guy.
Same kind of thing.
He's always doing rallies, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's out of town all the time. Yeah. I don't know how he runs his business.
Yeah, who's running his business for
him? Although, but for him, it is business.
It's business, yeah, I get it.
He really set himself up well there.
Smart guy.
Let's see, OPP, F1 in Vegas. You're going out Thursday. Ren Sport, ACH is open to Newcomb's, and your big announcement.
TWR.
How's life? Are you okay in real life? I mean, this is a lot of busy work stuff.
This is real life. You know, it's the out of control hobby.
How's Hannah, though? I mean, like, how's your...
Hannah's good. Life is good. Hannah's birthday's coming up. She's got a birthday in a couple of days.
Happy birthday, Hannah.
Yeah.
Oh, you'll be in Vegas for it?
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's happening. Willow's great. Life is good.
You're living at the house now, right? Like,
I've been at the house about a year. I sold the loft downtown. Not the warehouse. People get confused. You know, people come up to me, why'd you sell your warehouse? I go, I didn't. I sold the loft. Two different things.
I think people thought because of your video. Yeah.
Two different things. No, being at the house probably for a year. So now I'm commuting downtown, which is fine. It's not bothering me yet. Downtown's weird. It's like, you know, the big news this weekend, right? The 10 freeway fire, which is pretty close to where I'm at. But I'm coming in on the 101, so it hasn't really affected me.
It should be just south of you, right? Is that right? Or east?
Just south of the warehouse, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not like the traffic going downtown into the 101 to get to the 10. It's kind of not affected it yet. Because you catch it further east. It's close between Santa Fe and Alameda.
That is close to you, though.
Yeah, it's real close to me. So if I was to get on the 10 now, I can't just scoot down Santa Fe and get on the 10. I gotta do some ducking and weaving.
Canada, if you don't know, there was a pallet slash what's that hand sanitizer fire that may or may not have been arson. They're saying now, but it was underneath the 10 freeway, and now the 10 freeway is shut down indefinitely.
I mean, it was the size of 10 football fields.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a lot of land under, which raises the question: you know, who's monitoring what's getting stored?
Why are we storing
under a freeway? You know, obviously they rent that out to various places, and you know, it's become
pallet
yards and, you know, just all types of activity going on there.
It seems like a comically bad decision to park a whole truckload of hand sanitizer next to a bunch of kindling.
Right, exactly.
Because when and if it does go up.
I think the big concern is the structural integrity of the concrete columns
holding
up the freeway
might
actually be compromised and might not meet today's retro seismic earthquake, whatever.
Yeah. The governor was there this morning. State of emergency, of course. They're thinking like 5 weeks. Supposedly, they won't have to demo the bridge. They can shore it up and fix it little by little.
Yeah, of course.
But there's like 100 columns that, like you said, are affected.
Compromised.
It's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
But yet, somehow, you know, life still goes on, you know.
You were here in 94 for the Northridge
quake. Yeah, because I remember the 14 dropping down onto the 5 right there. And I remember the 10 actually being closed around La Cienega. And I thought it was 92.
94, I think. Right. Maybe, whatever it was, in the 90s.
It was just before. I was still in Venice. It was before I moved downtown. I moved downtown in 94. So it might have been right before I moved down. But yeah, I remember the 10 was down between La Brea and La Cienega, or Fairfax and La Cienega.
Collapsed, right?
Yeah, and the weird thing was that once you got on the 10 either side of that, no one was on the 10, so it was really quick. I think the challenge now is everyone coming into downtown, because it's the East LA interchange between the 5 and the 60. So it's right where you'd sort of be
navigating. Oh, it's a big triangle there.
Yeah, it's like one exit before that. So I think it's a real clusterfuck of people trying to circumvent it and navigate around it.
Oof, Lord. All right.
So be careful if you're going downtown. You know, if you're going on the LA Auto Show, for example, you'll be fine. Are you going on that?
Yes.
Remember last year on press day, it was kind of cool when we were all hanging out.
Oh, that was a great. Yeah, that was a great time. So are you going
Vegas?
This year?
No,
you'll be in Vegas for that.
Are you going?
Friday night, I'm supposed to go with Reggie to the Lucid. What's the electric Lucian? Lucent?
Lucid.
The Lucid. Yeah, Lucid. The Lucid launch event, whatever that is.
What's going on with all these electric car companies?
I don't know because I don't care. I want to care, but I just don't.
I don't care, but I think they're all losing money, like hand over fist.
Okay.
All of them.
Mike, I definitely think Tesla won't make it. I don't know why I say that. I just got a weird premonition that they will eventually be a license.
I'm not a Tesla fan at all. But if Tesla won't make it, what about all the others?
I feel like they'll perfect the technology, like the Google phone way back in the old days. You remember Google made a phone, and then it turned out that their software was better than the phone, so now they just license the software to everybody. And there is no Google phone. I feel like it'll be like that. That truck is a joke. That truck is such a joke. It can only be some sort of thing to get the technology for the big semi trucks going, which I think could work. The Cybertruck.
Crazy.
You saw the one at the Peterson. Have you seen any of the newer ones that are like quote unquote drivers
I've seen
now?
The footage online. I've seen that.
But they don't even look the same.
No.
None of the angles are the same.
It's like a bad backyard build. But you know.
Yeah. Like somebody. Right. Exactly. Somebody wanted to scam, put a Tesla truck out a little earlier and made one.
This is the mind of Tesla. So you're going to a Lucid party. That's what you're doing.
I guess we'll,
You're not going to the Porsche party in there?
No, I'm sure we'll do whatever. Yeah. We go where we're invited. I haven't been invited to some of that stuff yet. I don't get invited to the Porsche stuff that
it's
often.
Neither do I. It's more fun crashing parties. Having said that, though, I am going on the Porsche press drive for the 992 ST.
You guy.
Well, you know, it's a love-hate thing for me because it bugs me that they call it an ST because it has absolutely zero bearing. Even they're going to tell
marketing.
You it's lightweight. Yeah, it's all marketing. They should have just called it something else, like RTR.
I know.
Invent something new, and I won't be getting upset.
Just make it the new R.
Well, it is the new R. Like, everyone that had an R now has to have an ST, because it's the evolution of the R.
Right.
Just like back in the day, 67R, 68TR, 70ST. This was how it went.
Right.
So Porsche's just pulling out of the heritage, container and recycling, these labels, ST. And I get it. Yeah, it's lightweight and it's the new R. But they should have just come up with something else, like call it the 992 WTF. That would have been great.
Was it you who said that you didn't like the badges? Was it you? Somebody said they didn't like the grill badges in the back.
Not me.
Okay.
My beef is more on calling it an ST from a marketing point of view. It's a bit like the Dakar, If you really wanted to be on that, you should have just done the Dakar in the Dakar. Actually done the rally.
Race it. Yep.
And do it with your synthetic e-fuel and show that that's actually a viable thing.
You had that idea last year. That was a good idea.
When it debuted, you're playing on this heritage, the 40th anniversary, you got all the images of Jackie Ickx sat on the Recaro seat, on the sand dune. You've got this stupid rough roads down the side.
I got a hard time with that.
You don't want to say Rothmans, and it's typical German marketing that they don't get the sense. It's not a funny joke calling it rough roads. So you're debuting this car based on the Dakar off-roading, but yet you're not doing anything off-road about it to prove the worthiness of it.
I see your point.
So if you really wanted to score a big home run, you should, like Ford, I think, did the Baja 1000 in one of their F-150 pickup trucks with whatever their clean fuel is.
Yep.
And it kind of proved a point. But yet Porsche's marketing was like, we'll just park it on some, curbs at Cars and Coffee, and everyone will load it up with all the gear on the roof. And
pull it up on a rock.
Yeah, pull it on a rock, put an oriental carpet by it, and it'll look great on Instagram.
Yeah.
But just do the proper rally. That would have been great. That would have been proof of concept right there.
It's hard to contest.
Anyway, another OPP.
All right, so wrap up. You're going to Vegas.
Go to Vegas.
We're going to do Yellow Car OPP soon.
Right.
You got a huge, huge new car coming out. A new old car.
New old car
with TWR.
Yeah. I actually bought myself one so I can do my own car, so I'm committed.
Is that what's going to happen? Will yours be the first?
Time will tell.
Okay.
I mean,
These cars are around, right? You can find them.
Yeah, you can find them. It's sort of like any car of that era. You can buy them cheap, but it's like a $5,000 car that needs $20,000 worth of work to make it reliable. They all suffer from deferred maintenance because there's a lot of MacGyvered backyard, half-assed, Mickey Mouse sort of modifications and maintenance done to them. So, you know, I picked mine up, and ironically, the car I bought, remember when I did that show for Haggerty called The Next Big Thing?
Yeah, you worked here for it.
Yeah, yeah, I did all the VOs for it. Well, that was the big thing that came after The Next Big
Thing. Oh, but all right, but so, you're right. Yeah,
yeah, I remember. Next Big Thing, I actually did an episode on the XJS. Mm-hmm. No one remembers this, probably 2 years ago.
I do, I
and
like
there
it.
There were two cars in there, a white one and a black one. The black one is the car I own. So the car that was featured on the show, the woman that owned it, Caroline, reached out to me and go, "Hey, I'm thinking of selling my XJS if you know anybody." I go, "I'm interested." So I just went and bought that on a whim, knowing what was coming down the pipeline with TWR.
Wild.
So for me, if I'm committed, I'm 110% committed to the point where I actually went and bought a car to modify the way it's going to be.
You're committed, but you also let the flow work. You said, you know, you kind of, it's timing is everything.
Yeah.
You kind of just let it. Yeah, play out.
It was kind of organic that I'd had this idea 5 years ago to the point of on The Next Big Thing, one of the cars I really wanted to do was an XJS because part of that show for me was driving cars I was interested in. If you remember, I don't know if you remember, but I did an episode on a 308 GT4 Dino, mm-hmm. the blue one. Mm-hmm. What did I end up buying? A 308 GT4 Dino, because once I've driven one, I go, you know, sometimes it's an itch you want to scratch, right? And you drive a car and you go, oh, like Lamborghini Countach, right? Perfect example. Not quite what I thought it was going to be, and that's a $250,000 car minimum. Whereas an XJS, it's like a $7,000 car.
Right.
So when I'd done an episode on one, I go, oh, it's actually really pretty cool. And then 2 years later, TWR happens, and then 18 months later, the car comes up for sale, and I buy the car. And it turns out the car, the one I have, the black one, 88, might be 89, maybe it's 88, I don't remember. They all look the same. It's owned by the manager of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. That's the
come on.
Backstory.
And you live in a rock and roll house.
Yeah.
Cool.
Exactly. So it's kind of like this full circle. It's got faded paint, but it's original black XJS owned by the manager of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, circa 1988, 89.
That's
so
amazing.
It just sort of happened. It just evolved really organically. And when things roll like that, when there's no real stumbling blocks and hurdles, it just seems like it's meant to be.
Yep.
So time will tell how it sort of moves down the production line, let's say, you know, over the next year or two. But
are you excited?
Yeah, I'm super excited. I mean, I wouldn't be doing it if I wasn't excited. You know, to me, it's like, and doing something that is not Porsche-centric is exciting. Because part of it is like, no one saw it coming. Like yesterday, it was on front page of Top Gear and Evo, and you know, there's like 20
because it's making news, right?
It's kind of making news because you know, Kaizen Light together is newsworthy. Separate of that, TWR itself, the resurrection after 20 years, is newsworthy.
Okay.
This is a proper motorsports heritage brand. You know, it's not like some sort of backyard tuner that maybe did one thing. You know, these guys left a mark. You know, they raced at Le Mans, they won at Le Mans.
Right.
So to be involved with that and being English, the stars were aligning it. You know, it wasn't like, you know, someone approached me with a car that I had no interest in. The idea was already there. So it's kind of like, fuck, how did that happen? Yeah, sure. I'm in. I didn't have to really think about it.
Stay motivated, right?
Got to stay motivated. You got to do what you love to do. Like if I wasn't excited about it, I would just say, no, I'm not interested.
And you do.
I'd say that quite a lot. I have no problem saying no.
People must reach out to collaborate all the time, right?
It happens quite a lot. And this is the other sort of, I'm not calling it big news, but it's the first time I've collaborated really with anyone. Like I haven't actually collaborated with Porsche. You know, I've gone on stuff, but I haven't collaborated with them. You know, I haven't really collaborated with other Porsche people. There's been one or two, like I helped my buddy Helmut with his car and perhaps
the blue one with the gold?
Yeah, blue one with the gold. And then obviously Sharky with the GT2, you know, I was involved in that. But they were buddies.
Yeah.
You know, so I actually...
The GT2, is that the story where Sharky just left it with you and said, just take it and do what...
That's exactly a true story. He brought it down, the 997 GT2, and said, hey, keep it as long as you want. I ended up keeping that car 2-3 months. My buddy Matt Baum painted it. I came up with that concept in the livery and did the plaid interior. And that was a really, really cool car.
Yeah.
You know, I did that in 2015. I even drove my mum around in that car. I took her to Huntington Library in that car. So, you know, that was like, Sharky's a great guy. And it was just like, who leaves you a GT2 and says, have it as long as you want, right? Nobody actually does that. But he did. So that to me was just a cool collaboration. You know, the same with Helmut's car was a cool collaboration. But I generally...
I think we met you with Helmut's car. That's literally how we met you. I don't know if you even remember meeting us. At? Checkered Flag.
Checkered Flag?
Yep. In Marina Del Rey.
Wow, you guys were kicking tires down there?
We were.
Yeah?
Yep. And we had just come home. We lived in Venice at the time, and we had just come home from Pelican.
Okay.
The Pelican Cars and Coffee down in the promenade.
See, that's a classic example of an event that I have no idea when it is, and then I hear about it on the Monday, and I go, fuck, I would have gone to that.
But anyway, I think you were looking at the BMW Shark, the 6 Series, maybe that day.
Yeah. Perhaps,
because I had actually driven the one that they had there.
Yeah, that's the car on the list.
Talking that, and I was probably wearing an Urban Outlaw shirt, if I recall all that.
That's funny.
And that wasn't embarrassing at all.
Yeah, that had to have been...
Nice shirt. That's what you said. You go, oh, nice shirt. I was like, fuck.
That had to have probably been 2015.
Sounds about right.
2014, 2015.
That sounds about right. We moved up here in 17, so it was...
The Outlaw wheel came out in 2014, ironically. I just posted about it.
The Momo wheel?
No, the Outlaw road wheel.
1552.
Yeah.
Coming back? Heard rumors that might be coming back.
I don't know.
Reissue? Series 2?
I don't think with 1552. Okay. You know, Matt and Brad are no longer part of that company.
Didn't know that.
So, odd story. You know, they sort of get... I don't know if they get bought out, but British tuning company Monotune comes in, invests in them. They own 51%.
Oh.
It's a classic. Within a year, the two founders are no longer part of the company.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just leave it at that.
Got it.
And that all ended in 2019. That was like a 5-year run.
All right.
There's still a demand for the wheel. It's just a matter of teaming up with someone, you know, who feels as passionate about it and reintroducing it.
How did the... You did a later issue of like a larger water-cooled wheel.
Yeah.
That I thought was a super cool... design.
The very first set we ever did were on my blue turbo, and we debuted those ironically at Red Bull in 2014, the gold one. So gold wheels on the blue 930 turbo, the 15x8s and 9s, mm-hmm. 225 275. Mm-hmm. So the original wheel was available in 15 and 16 inch two-piece forged, any sort of offset, any color combo, any diameter. But within the first 2 years, we'd gone up to 17 and 18, and by the time the program ended, we'd gone all the way up to 20 inch, which was fitment for 997s and 991s. Yeah. So you could get anything from a one piece forged monoblock, which was the 19 and 20 inch for 997, 991, two piece forged, or like a three piece bolt together.
Interesting.
So literally, and we even did a four spoke four lug one that would fit like a 914 VW. Yeah.
Cool.
So there were a lot of options. Probably with that program, there were too many varieties and options. Mm. And part of the challenge was, of course, people would order a wheel not knowing the correct offset. They'd go, you know, I've got a blah, blah, blah. Let's say, you know, I've got a 78 SC, but they don't tell them that they had big brakes. So, you know, they wait for the wheels and the wheels don't clear the brakes. But they never said, oh, I've got big red turbo or boxer brakes on the front. You know, of course, the offset was wrong. So
you want to return the wheel,
made. There were a lot of issues like that where people didn't really say, well, yeah, it's an SC, but it's got slightly modified flares. And, you know, so they'd miscalculate the backspace. And, you know, it's kind of tricky calculating clearance and backspace on a car with a wheel and tire combo. So there were just a lot of variables with that program. And as, you know, the wheel was individually made, what was made here in L.A., so the price was, you know, it wasn't like a $399 wheel.
No.
So there wasn't a lot of volume. So, of course, you know, they didn't get a lot of priority when it came to manufacturing. So it was one of those things where they'd quote an optimistic 8 to 10 week delivery, which would end up being more like 4 months.
Right.
And then sometimes it would come in not quite right due to customers' incorrect ordering of an ET offset or backspace or whatever it was. Mm. So there were some issues which kind of hampered production, but...
5 millimeters will kill you.
Yeah, kind of will. I mean... The amount of cars I've driven where the clearance between the brake caliper and the inside of the wheel is 2 sheets of paper.
Absolutely.
But that's all you need. It either clears or it doesn't.
Or you get that one little line.
Yeah, which eventually grinds itself off, and then you have clearance.
Eventually it fits.
So the issues are either clearance on the inside of the barrel with the caliper, or it's the opposite. It's on the outside, and it's rubbing the fender.
The tire and the fender well, yeah.
And then people, oh, well, you know, they didn't roll the lip of the fender, or they went... too aggressive a tire setup, or they didn't have enough negative camber, or the car was too low, or the suspension was too soft. There's a lot of variables to get what people call stance that functions, where you have, you know, compression on suspension, you've got the right amount of negative camber, so it just slides up into the wheel well without gouging, you know, the outside of the tire. And that's all about setup and corner balancing and all that stuff. It's not just like, oh yeah, it looks great on Magnus's car, I want that setup.
Well, people ask that all the time, though.
Yeah, of
course. They'll look at yellow car. And they, oh, what do you spacer are you running? What whatever. Right. I'm like, you got a list. It's 100 different things.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if you're running a spacer, and then you got to have long, you know, studs and
long
lugs,
studs.
You know,
yeah.
Because you've got to have the clearance, backspace, whatever it may be, right?
It's not one thing, though. They think, oh, I want that. How do
it's
I get that?
It's never just a bolt-on. Give me a 15x7 and 8. I'm going to run a 225 tower on it, bolt it on. It's great. That may happen, but seldom does that happen without some modification on everything we've just spoke about.
You mentioned four corner. Do you still use Marty?
Yeah.
I do, too. Yellow car. He did yellow car.
Yeah, I still use him.
It's awesome. I wish he had a shop, but... Yeah. Nice going to his house.
Nice house. He's great. Come on. That's
the dog. You can hang out with the dog.
I've known him 20 years from the POC days.
Really?
Yeah. He used to have a shop called Von's Diesel right near Woodley Park off of Sepulveda at the 405 working on big rig diesel trucks. And he had one little bay where he'd be doing Porsches.
Mm.
But he's like that early turbo I've got, the 76, the first US production turbo ever sold. He hooked that deal up. He'd worked on it for the prior two owners prior to me. I've owned that car, I think, 10, 12 years. He was working on it 25 years before that.
No shit.
So he'd known that car forever.
Well, so that's priceless.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my fave cars. And Marty's a great guy. He's one of my fave guys.
Yeah, he does real good work. I got to let you out of here. What's that?
Marty Materian for you guys out there.
I never knew his last name.
He didn't know his name was Materian?
Nope. It's just Marty.
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 Marty, Marty, Marty. All right.
Go see Marty.
Yeah, go see Marty.
All right. You're going to be in Vegas at F1 this weekend. Say hi. Say hi. And all the other stuff is good and great.
Yeah, you know,
no more wraps up.
OPP every second Tuesday. That's it.
Every other Tuesday? Is that what it is?
Every other Tuesday.
Okay.
Two a month.
I'm glad you're doing well. I'm glad you're killing it. I'm glad that you're friends with us. I love everything you do. I love
always,
your vibe, man.
Always good to be over here. I appreciate the invite. Let's talk about that Newcomb's off the record, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas dinner thing.
I mean, we're going to do it now. We just decided, right?
Yeah, we're doing it.
So it's a matter of how we pull it off.
Yeah, we just don't know if there's room for all those people out there.
All right. I love you. Hang on, Mike, what's going on with you up there? How are you? You have anything for Magnus before he leaves?
Another great show with Magnus. No, you know what? Let's give it to Dan McInnes. The White Collection OPP episode was very interesting and loved the oddball stuff in it. Enjoyed it very much. There you go.
Well, I appreciate the support to everyone that watched it. It's going to be interesting to see what those things sell for and if the future owners actually drive them.
Jeff Walker, no relation, I don't think, says long time no see. Vegas used to be cheap, not so much anymore. Nutty Room Raids, yeah, Hard Rock is now Virgin. Mirage is going to be raised and become the new Hard Rock. The Mirage.
No way.
The Mirage used to be the Tigers, right?
Yeah, Siegfried and Roy.
Siegfried and Roy, yeah, that was the Mirage.
Next to Treasure Island.
Yes.
That's going to be the Hard Rock?
That's going to be the new Hard Rock, according to this person, Ryan James. And Tony Roger Fishman from Telefunken says hi.
All right. He's a big fan of yours. Hi to all you guys. Thanks for tuning in.
I love you.
Champ. I'm feeling it.
Huge trooper over here.
Big warrior over there.
It's not been a great day.
Tomorrow's another day. Tomorrow will be a better day. That's the way to look at that. Proud warrior. Proud of yous twos.
We love you, man. Thanks for everything. You've supported us from the beginning. It's really, really...
Thanks for having me on.
We appreciate it, man.
I'll see you at Christmas.
See you before that. All
right. Last time I was on, we had the Christmas hats. I came on.
Oh, you're right.
Oh, so it was before Christmas last year. That was last time I had.
You're right. You're right.
Since we swapped Santa hats or something.
You're totally right. I had the witch's hat on. That's right.
I came out in the Santa hat.
Was your mom here? Was that time or a different time?
No, my mom was here because we'd just done the Peterson thing. And remember, she didn't think it was live. That was a funny bit.
That's how you convinced her to do it.
Yeah.
Your mom's good too?
Mom's good, yeah. Awesome. She's still dating Harry. You know, Harry's like, I don't know, 92 years old. My mom's 80. But yeah, that was a funny show.
All right, we love everybody. See you later.
Later.
Have a good night.
That was-